There's a person at your workplace, maybe you're picturing them right now, who seems to get the benefit of the doubt on everything. They're a few minutes late, and it reads as busy, important. Someone else is a few minutes late, and it reads as unreliable. Same behavior, completely different story. And the strange part is, nobody decided to treat them differently. It just happened, quietly, automatically. I'm Andre Barburas, and this is The Unlearning Project, a podcast from barburas.com, where every couple of weeks we take one assumption that usually goes unexamined and we crack it open. Today's assumption is this, that we judge people's actions on their own merits, case by case, fairly. We don't. And the reason we don't has a name, the halo effect, and once you see it, you start noticing it everywhere. The term comes from psychologist Edward Thorndike, who in 1920 studied how military officers rated their soldiers. He found something odd. If an officer rated a soldier highly on one trait, say, physical bearing, that same soldier tended to get high ratings on completely unrelated traits too, like intelligence or leadership, even when there was no evidence for it. One positive impression was bleeding into everything else. Thorndike called it the halo effect, because it was as if one quality cast a glow over the entire person, and that glow made everything about them look better. A century later, this isn't just a curiosity from old military records. It's one of the most well-documented biases in how humans evaluate each other, and it runs quietly underneath performance reviews, hiring decisions, promotions, and day-to-day judgments about who's good and who's struggling. And here's the uncomfortable part. It doesn't feel like bias when it's happening. It feels like evidence. It feels like you're reading the situation correctly. That's what makes it so hard to catch. Let's slow down and look at how it actually works, because the mechanism is more interesting than the label. The halo effect is, at its core, a shortcut. Our brains are constantly trying to form a coherent picture of people. We don't like holding contradictory impressions, because contradiction takes effort to process. So once we form one strong impression of someone, usually based on something visible early on, like confidence, charisma, attractiveness, or a strong first result, that impression becomes a kind of lens. Everything we observe afterward gets filtered through it. Ambiguous behavior gets interpreted in a way that's consistent with the lens, because consistency is cognitively comfortable, even when it isn't accurate. So if someone is seen as a high performer from early on, maybe they nailed an early project, maybe they're simply confident in meetings, that label doesn't just describe them. It starts to generate the evidence that supports it. They speak in a meeting, and it's read as strategic thinking. Someone else says something similar, and it's read as going off topic. They miss a deadline, and it's they're stretched too thin, they have so much on their plate. Someone else misses a deadline, and it's they're not managing their workload. None of the people making these judgments think they're being unfair. That's the part worth sitting with. This isn't a story about bad actors deliberately favoring their friends, although that happens too. And it's a different conversation. This is about something more structural, a cognitive default that operates before conscious evaluation even begins. By the time you're deciding how to interpret someone's behavior, the halo has often already done the interpreting for you. Now, here's where it gets even more layered, because the halo effect doesn't operate in isolation. It interacts with unconscious bias in ways that compound, rather than just coexist. Research on hiring and performance evaluation has repeatedly found that the traits most likely to trigger an early halo, confidence, assertiveness, fluency, a certain kind of polish, aren't evenly distributed across how people are perceived. They're shaped by familiarity. We tend to read confidence more easily in people whose communication style, background, or demeanor matches what we're already used to seeing in competent people, which, in most organizations, has historically meant a fairly narrow range of styles. So the halo effect doesn't just amplify a first impression. It amplifies a first impression that was already more likely to form for some people than others. This is part of why you'll sometimes hear that bias isn't just about who gets judged harshly. It's equally about who gets judged generously and how that generosity compounds over time into outsized trust, outsized opportunity, and outsized benefit of the doubt, none of which shows up as bias in the moment because it doesn't look like exclusion. It looks like rapport. It looks like they're a great culture fit. It looks like someone simply being given the room to grow into bigger responsibilities, while someone else doing comparable work is quietly held to a higher bar of proof before the same trust is extended. There's a flip side to all this, and it's just as important, the reverse halo effect, sometimes called the horn effect. Once someone gets coded negatively, maybe they had one bad presentation early on. Maybe their communication style reads as abrasive to people unfamiliar with it. Maybe they made one visible mistake in their first month. That single data point can start to color everything that follows. Good work gets read as finally meeting expectations, rather than simply being good work. Reasonable pushback gets read as difficult. The story isn't this person made one mistake. The story becomes this is the kind of person who makes mistakes, and now every subsequent action gets slotted into that frame, whether it fits or not. What makes both the halo and the horn effect so persistent is that they're largely invisible from the inside. If you asked any of the people involved, the manager forming the impression, the colleague benefiting from it, the colleague being quietly disadvantaged by it, none of them would describe what's happening as bias. They describe it as just how things are, which is, in a way, the most accurate description possible. It is just how things are. That's exactly the problem. So, what do you actually do with this? Awareness alone doesn't dissolve the halo effect. Knowing about a cognitive bias doesn't make your brain stop using it, any more than knowing about an optical illusion makes the illusion disappear. But awareness does something else. It creates the possibility of friction. A small pause where, instead of trusting the immediate read, you ask a slightly different question. Not, does this fit what I already think about this person? But, if I'd never met this person before, what would I make of this specific piece of evidence on its own? That question is harder than it sounds, because it requires temporarily setting aside the story you've already built, and our minds are not naturally inclined to do that. The story feels true. The story feels like it's just an accurate read of someone's character, built up over time through real observation. It rarely feels like a halo. It feels like knowing someone. There's also a structural angle worth mentioning, particularly for anyone in a position to shape how evaluations happen, performance reviews, hiring panels, promotion discussions. The halo effect thrives on ambiguity and aggregation. The more vague the criteria, leadership potential, executive presence, culture fit, the more room there is for a general impression to fill in the gaps. The more specific and evidence-based the criteria, what was actually done, what was the measurable outcome? What happened when this specific situation arose? The less room the halo has to operate, because there's less ambiguity for it to fill. This doesn't mean rigid scorecards solve everything. People find ways to let impressions seep into even structured processes. But it does mean that specificity is one of the few real counterweights to a bias that otherwise operates below conscious awareness. Here's where I want to leave this, because I don't think the goal is to walk away from this episode newly suspicious of everyone's motives. That's not quite the point, and it's not particularly useful either. The point is closer to this. The halo effect means that reputation, once formed, becomes partially self-sustaining, not through deliberate effort by anyone, but through the quiet mechanics of how impressions filter perception. Which means some people are operating with a kind of accumulated credit they didn't consciously earn in each individual moment. and others are operating with an accumulated deficit they didn't consciously earn either. Both of those positions feel, from the inside, like simply being who you are and being seen accordingly. So here's the question to sit with. Think of someone at work who you describe as reliable, talented, a safe pair of hands, someone whose mistakes you'd probably explain away if you noticed them at all. And then think of someone you describe as the opposite, someone whose successes might get quietly attributed to luck or help or low difficulty. Now ask yourself, how much of that difference is actually about what they've done, and how much of it is about which one of them got the halo first? That's it for this episode of The Unlearning Project. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. Until then, pay attention to who gets the benefit of the doubt and who doesn't.